Okay, started?
Yep.
Okay. I was asked to speak. Originally, I was asked to speak about poetry and prayer, since so much of tefillah is poetry. So that seemed like, it seemed like a reasonable thing. I considered it unreasonable, because speaking about poetry doesn't give you a sense of poetry. So instead, I will speak about tefillah by going through a tefillah that is in fact not a tefillah. But let me just give you some introductory comments, which are very important and which really would require a large investment of your time and your life if you wanted to daven properly or understand why it is that there are people in the world who think that davening is actually important. So I'm just going to list them. The first is very, very simple, right? And that is, if you don't understand what you're saying, it is by definition meaningless. Now, I know that you all probably know the Hasidic story of the kid who doesn't know how to daven. And it's Yom Kippur, so he's blowing on his whistle. Right? Another Hasidic story of a person who doesn't know how to daven. So he's doing somersaults in shul. And the third Hasidic story is a person who doesn't know how to daven, but he knows the Aleph Beis. So he cries out to God, I don't know how to put it together. Aleph, Beit, Gimel, you put it together in prayer for worlds. Now these stories are very, very powerful and meaningful stories, right? And if people say, as they will occasionally, I don't know what I'm saying, then I've sometimes said to them, well, why don't you do somersaults? And they look at me as if I am odd, okay, or blow a whistle. Okay, they might be correct, but nonetheless. That's number one. You've got to know what you're saying. It's very simple. Now, it's also true that when you say you know what you're saying, you're thinking about translating the words. But of course, that in itself is a problem if you assume correctly that most of, a good deal of prayer is actually poetry. And as Robert Frost said, the only thing lost in the translation of poetry is the poetry. And it's no small loss. The second thing for prayer, and now we're getting into really difficult territory, is a sense of the presence of God in your life. God, not just a word. But even if you have, say, I believe in God, there's God, there's somebody, some power behind, right? Right? But you, a person without a sense of need, I don't need anything. Were any of you guys, did any of you guys ever in a state of starvation? Did you ever use the word, say, in your life, I'm starving? An insult to the fact that in the course of the time that I will be speaking this morning, and I have no idea how long I'll speak, but roughly every 15 minutes, 10,000 people in the world will die of starvation or causes related to starvation. 10,000 people will die. So don't take the word starvation. Don't use it like levatola. So we don't have the need. And what we do have, you could express in prayer in another way. The other way you could express it in prayer is through gratitude. Gratitude. But what do we feel grateful for? if everything is a given, if everything is understood that I have to have it, it's no big deal, so I don't feel grateful. So for the everyday things in life, you have water, you have food, you have health. It's taken without gratitude because we expect it to be that way. Now, of course, the difference between human beings and animals is that you animals take everything for granted. I'm personifying animals. They take it for granted. There's going to be food, right? They're going to eat some other animal, or some animal will eat them. You know, we look at it and we feel very bad for Bambi's mother, but that's just the way that it is. Everything is for granted. Human beings are the only creature that can take things with gratitude. And yet, what should we be grateful for? Do we feel grateful that we're breathing? The third thing, which is very difficult about prayer, is that we don't like to feel that we're dependent. Dependency is a really tough thing. You know, that I needed somebody else. Right? Cynics will say, when you do someone a favor, run as fast as you can the other way, because they'll hold it against you. They may not be ruined. There is a fifth issue in prayer, and that is that Jewish prayer is supposed to be properly done on the communal level. So I say, why should I not just pray by myself? In fact, other people get in the way. Why do I have to come to what we call minyan? Perhaps we'll talk about that. But what I'd like to look at now is a prayer on the sheet that I gave you. There are two sources, essentially. There are more sheets there if anybody's on the sheet. Okay? One of them, both of them, in fact, I hope you're familiar with. Okay? One of them is, you'll find it in all your Siddurim. I'm talking about Ashkenaz, Svard, Edot HaMizrach, even though it's a rather late composition. But it's printed in all the Siddurim, all those that I checked, and I checked a number of them. And what we call Modani. Okay? Is there anybody who's never heard of Modani? Let's put up. Right? Did you? Right? I'm not saying anything new. Modani. Okay? Now, Modani, halachically, is not prayer. I'll explain to you why Modani is halachically not prayer, how you can prove it. Okay? Because before prayer, you're supposed to wash your hands, netilat yadayim, right? Okay, is everybody familiar with this halacha? That you're supposed to wash your hands, right? Get up in the morning, netilat yadayim. But modani does not require netilat yadayim. You can say it, the poskim say, you can say it before you've washed your hands. So if it's not prayer, and it's printed in the Siddur, what is it? How should we look at these 12 words? Modani lefonecha. Melech chai v'kayam. Shechzarta b'nishmatei b'chemla rabam emunatecha. Would somebody translate it for me? I only gave you the Hebrew side. What's the translation? Somebody dare translate it? Yes.
I thank you, existing and living in present, King, that you returned my soul to me with lots of love.
With lots of love. Chemla, you have this love. Okay. Nothing's wrong here, right? You stopped a little bit at Lifonecha. What's your translation again? I'm not saying you're wrong, but you stopped before you came up with that. You put it in.
Raj said, we thank you, didn't
it? What?
It's like Modi Manachnulah, right? The same phrasing.
except it says lefanecha. So you say to you, okay? Lefanecha. Okay, good, good. Modani lefanecha melechai v'kayam. So I want to go through this more or less word by word. Okay? Word by word means it'll take a little bit longer than if you just looked in the translation and whatever translation you're using. But you think about words. And that's the difference, of course, between praying, davening in Hebrew or davening in English. Can you daven in English? Halachically, right? Somebody says, look, I don't understand any word in the Shemoneh Esrei, right? So what do you tell them to do? Daven in English. Of course daven in English, right? But what, you miss the nuances if something is written in Hebrew and you're reading it in English, you're missing the nuances, right? Have you ever read the Gettysburg Address in Hebrew? Have you ever read the Gettysburg Address? What? Okay, does anybody know it by heart? David Leshaw, where are you? You know it by heart? No, you're just moving your hand. Okay, nobody wants to, okay. But I can assure you that reciting or reading it in English, it is incredibly moving, right? If you read we're all English speakers, if you read the Gettysburg Address in English and you're not moved, then you have to go right away to a doctor, right? To a soulologist. You don't have a soul. If you read it in Hebrew and you're not moved, no. That's the nature of translations. So the words, I want to get into words here. Words, as Shakespeare says, words, words, words. Okay? Modeh. So you correctly, Akiva? Okay. I'm on sabbatical. I don't have to know anybody's name. Okay? It's all good. Right, good. Okay. Modeh, you know it from Modeh. Okay? Modeh can mean two things in Hebrew. And this is based, as some of the faculty knows, based on Rav Huttner Torah in Hanukkah, that maybe somebody will teach you for Hanukkah. Right? Modim can mean to thank. You know the word todah? Right? To thank. What else can it mean? To praise. Praise is connected to thanking, right? Thanking is a form of praising people, right? You got it?
To admit.
What?
Admit.
To admit. Excellent. Right? In Hebrew, this is what Rav Huttner points out. In Hebrew, actually in the prayer of Modim, we have both uses of the term. When you want to praise or thank somebody, in Hebrew, ani modeh lecha al, right? For that. And you say what you're giving him thanks for, right? Do you remember in Modim, you said it this morning? Modim, al chayenu amsurim biyodecha, v'yal nishmoteinu apudot loch, for our lives that in your hand, God, al nishmoteinu apudot loch, right? Nisecho v'niflotecho shebechol yom imanu erev vavokev. It's all right. Okay? Who's experiencing a miracle right now? Come on. What?
I am.
What's the miracle you're experiencing? Exactly. That's otherwise you would be lying. You say that we are experiencing miracles and wonders every day, all day. Erev vavokev. It's all right. Life is miraculous. If we take life for granted, so then nothing is a miracle. Everything, nothing is, right? But it's a miracle, and that's modeh al. In Hebrew, when I admit something, as in the juridical sense of admitting an obligation, okay? So, I said a bracha, don't. Admitting an obligation, ani modeh she, ani modeh she ani chayav lecha, right? I admit that I owe you $1 million. Ani modeh she ani chayav lecha, right? $1 million. New? What is this? Right, right. Because, what's the word? Shecher Zarta. I begin my day, the first consciousness. This is what you're supposed to say when you wake up. When you wake up, right? Not, I wish they'd turn off that noise. Not, you know, not like, you know, it's going to be a great day because, you know, the Red Sox are going to win, or it's going to be a great day because the Red Sox are going to lose. Well, I don't care who wins this, right? Actually, well, I'd rather the Red Sox win because the Dodgers disappointed me so greatly. 60 years ago, roughly. Imagine moving out of Brooklyn. Who would do such a thing? Right? So my first awareness, and this is why I say this is not a prayer. I'm not asking for anything. If you don't say Mode Ani, or even if you say it and you're not aware, you're just going babble, 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 babble. You know, gobbledygook, because those are words you say. Then, if you don't have the attitude of Mode Ani, then you don't have the attitude of prayer. Shechzarta bi nishmati. You know, where is life from? What's the source of life? Gratitude is one thing, but awareness, just simple awareness. I admit that life itself is a gift that you give to me. Now, Shechazartobi, it returned. Where did it return from? You returned to me my breath. This is interesting. Guys, where was your breath? Where was your life? Breathing is life, right? If I did this long enough, you'd be saying, it's enough, Rabbi, we get the point, right? We don't have to call Rav Denny in and put you in the Christian missionaries ambulance. No? Where? Breath. Without breath, without, if somebody's not breathing, he's not alive. So where is it? What is being said here? What is it about sleep? Are you breathing? Yes.
Sleep is like dead.
What? Okay, in what way? Do you breathe during sleep?
Yes.
Yes, you do. So then you're breathing. So in what are we missing in sleep? We are breathing. I understand it's like there is a likeness to death. Yes.
You're conscious.
On the surface consciousness, we won't get into subconscious or Freudian or all that kind of stuff, right? And that is marked by... Wait a second. Let's see if we understand what the author of this was saying. Neshama, right? Where does that come from? Where's the first place neshama appears in the Torah? What? It's in creation. When in creation? Ah. So otherwise, we are, imagine, we are like the golem. You know about the golem of Prague? That story? That fairy tale? Okay? You know about the golem? Any of you guys been in Prague? You've been in Prague. You went to it, the Altneuschul?
Yeah.
Yeah, did the tour guide tell you about this room as the golem and anybody? Right? If they gave me... a dollar, I would go in there. If they gave me nothing, I would go in there. I would whistle Dixie. I mean, it's all made up by tour guides. There is no golem, right? But it's a great thing. People are, you know, and it's a powerful, as a legend, it's a powerful legend, right? These, Shalom has an essay, the golem of Prague, and when they installed the first computer room in Rehovot, in Weizmann Institute, said the golem of Prague and the golem of Rehovot, okay, where Weizmann Institute is, okay, and of course the golem ultimately might prove to be artificial intelligence, but I'm not going to get into that now, okay, you'll find out when they take over. Okay? So, man, God breathes into man nishmat chayim. Vayipach biyapav nishmat chayim. The breath of life. Right? God, there's, you know, about artificial respiration. That's how we come to life. Divine respiration. That's the beautiful imagery. If you don't get it, if you don't see how beautiful and moving it is, then I just feel sorry for you. I can't help, right? To be breathed into life, the breath of God, right? And what is it when, what does the Torah say that it happened when God breathed life into man? When man is created, what does he become? Vayehi ha'adam, and man became, what did he become? Two words. No Balai Kriya here? Vayehi ha'adam, lenefesh chaya, a living creature. A living soul, right? Whatever it is, right? Lenefesh chaya, beautiful. There's one problem with that. Does anybody own a dog here? Is your dog alive? Yes, your dog is alive, right? Okay. What would we call your dog in biblical Hebrew? A nefesh chaya. All animate creatures are nefesh chaya. So what's the big deal that man is a nefesh chaya? Targum Unculus, obviously facing this problem, Targum Unculus translates nefesh chaya as, listen carefully to the alliteration, leruach, spirit, mimalela. Do you know what lemalel is? What? No, that would be lamala. Your hearing is good, but the malala, without an ayin, that is malala. Me yemalel v'rod yisrael. Any of you sing that song on Hanukkah? You know that song? It's a Zionist song. The pasuk says, "Me yemalel." Who can speak of the powers of God? The Zionists changed it to the powers. Me yemalel v'rod yisrael. Right? Okay. Man becomes a speaking creature. A speaking creature. The power of speech. The power of speech is simply the externalization of the power of thought. You can't think without words, and you can't express yourself if you can't speak. Right? I mean, I'm roughly. Shenzarta be you, God, right? Before I pray, I have to know that the ability to pray, the distinction, the glory of prayer is rooted in speech, that I can speak. It's no small matter. What do we say before we say Shmone Tzra Esrei? What's the word that we say? Hashem Svatai Tiftach. You, God, open my lips. Let my mouth speak your praises. No small matter, speech. And this is what we sort of lose, consciousness in sleep. We lose speech. I'm not talking about the value of sleep. It's very valuable. I'm not talking about about all kinds of things. I'm not talking about the value of dreams and all of this, but speech. That I can speak. Not to take that for granted. I admit that this is the most important thing. That's why it's the first thing I say in the day. That will, in fact, allow me to pray. Without speech, ani. What's ani? No. What translated? That's an easy one. I. What's the difference between ani and anochi? Actually, I don't know. I don't know. What's the difference? I'm talking to the rabbis. Have you ever thought?
Yeah, the Ishbitzer. The Ishbitzer.
What does the Ishbitzer say? What?
Anochi Hashem Alakefa.
Anochi Hashem Alakefa.
The Kaf, the Kaf, the Dimayon. Ki Ani. Kamo Ani. That's what the Ishbitzer says.
Ani and the Cha, that's after the...
No, Ani, you can only understand God to a certain point.
You mean because there's a Chaf in the word? But why didn't God say Ke Ani? Because he was waiting for a Hasidic Torah. No, I don't know. Can I go on a tangent? I can tell you a story. Some of you might have heard this story. When I was a kid, so we moved from New Jersey... I was in the JEC. You know the JEC? You know JEC? You guys don't know the JEC? Don't tell my wife you never heard of the JEC. That would be a big mistake. I moved from New Jersey. My parents moved to Montreal. So I was in the 12th grade, and they didn't know what to do with me. You know this story? Okay. No, because I always have to tell the story the same way, otherwise people say they told it differently last time. So, the Canadian school system was different. So I had to graduate high school, so otherwise I'm not sure what would have happened. So my parents decided that, okay, they would send me to Tells for a year. Tells the yeshiva in Cleveland. Then that was a very big yeshiva. Okay? So my father felt that I should get, during the summer, before, I should get more preparation in Gemara than I had. So he arranged for me to learn an hour every week with Rav Hirschsprung. Rav Hirschsprung, whom I'm sure that you've never heard of. Okay? You have? Chief Hirschhorn was a chief rabbi. Rabbi Hirschsprung was, people might have called him that, but at the time he certainly wasn't, and I don't know if he ever had that title. Anyway, so what do you know about Rabbi Hirschsprung?
I thought he was a former chief rabbi.
Okay, and what else?
He was supposedly like a prodigy, he knew all of Shas.
Okay, so he was supposedly, now I'm going to correct you, he wasn't supposedly, he was. At the age of 18, he was the tester in Yeshiva Chachmi Lublin. You guys been to Poland, been in Yeshiva Chachmi Lublin? Right? So you know that was the elite institution of Polish Jewry. And to get into Yeshiva Chachmi Lublin, you had to know 200 daf of Gemara, Rashi, and Tosos. And you were tested on it. Okay? It wasn't that you had to know what Toshma meant. Right? You were tested on it. But it didn't matter which 200 daf you said you knew. Okay? So any 200 daf, you could say. So the person who was the tester was Rabbi Hirschsprung. He was 18 years old at the time. Okay. So my father arranged that I should learn with him for an hour every day. And that I can tell you, I can tell you stories. I'm not going to take the time now because, you know, like this would be too long and tangent. It's not supposedly, right? I experienced it. But somebody came into, people would come in, it was during the summer, we were the only people in the base medrash. I learned with him for an hour every day. And people would come in and talk to him and ask him a question, this and that, in the middle of our chavruta. So some kid comes in, turns out like he was a 14-year-old kid, long payas from the Satmar Yeshiva in New York, and he says to Rabbi Hirschsprung, my Rebbe told me that I should come and take a test from you when I'm in Montreal. Now, obviously, this kid was probably the best kid. You don't send, you know, you're going to send him for a test, you're going to send somebody, right? So Hirschsprung said, what did you learn? He said, Gemara Gittin. He said, what did you learn in math? Who learns math? You know, and he says, so he kidded around with him for a while. The kid didn't catch that he was kidding around with him. But Rabbi Hirschsprung believed in education beyond. So then he starts asking questions. And the kid, in Gemara Gittin, he learned the entire Gemara Gittin, 90 daf, over the course of a half a year, and Rabbi Hirschsprung began asking him questions, following the daf, like, and the kid, like that, everything he got right. And then we're somewhere around daf Samach something Amud Aleph, that's as much as I remember. And Rabbi Hirschsprung asks him a question on a Tosfos. kid thinks. He says, I don't know. So Rabbi Hirschsprung goes on and asks him another question. Kid says, what's the answer? Rabbi Hirschsprung says, I don't know. The kid said, if the Rebbe doesn't know, why did the Rebbe ask me the question? Rabbi Hirschsprung, who had this wonderful, wonderful shining face and wonderful eyes, was able to express wonder. I saw this many times. His eyes opened wide and he looked at the kids. I was sitting right there with them. That's all. Just me, the Hasidic kid, and Rabbi Hirschsprung. His eyes opened wide. And he said, why did I ask you? Because I don't know. I thought, if I don't know, maybe you'll know. And then he said to the kid, can you come back on, I think it was Sunday, at a certain time, and we'll sit down and we'll learn the Tosfos together. Maybe we'll both figure out an answer. I'm sorry I never asked them if they figured out an answer, right? But that I learned, and later I was to see it, of course, with other people I was zocheh to learn with, the idea that the search for truth, what do you mean? Yes, I don't know, I want to know. Wherever you accept the truth from whoever says it, right? The wanting to know, right? Anyway, we're back at speech, right? The capacity for speech, and that's what prayer is rooted in, to speak before God. To have clarity in thinking. Clarity! Not stam. You'll listen to people talk today. It's not only just politicians who are just mumbling. And I mean, it's the dissolution of language, and that's very dangerous. Study the dissolution of language in the 20th century. The way language dissolves in German and in American English during the Vietnam War and so on, and during the Second World War, Germany. This is dangerous when up is down and right is left, and words are whatever I want them to mean. We live in Wonderland with Humpty Dumpty. This is dangerous. Shechzarta bi nishmasi bechemla. You have returned the neshama. Be. What is be? In me. As God breathed into man. Into me. Be. Right? So I have be. I know what it means. Into me. I don't know what ani means. That's what I asked the question. Right? I do know. I forget who it was. Maybe it was... I'm not sure which Rebbe it was. Now, I'm not saying all Hasidic stories are true, but I have to say them the way I heard them. And I forget which Rebbe, who started saying, one morning he said, I started saying Moda, but I got stuck on Ani. Right? I don't know what the meaning of Ani is. Right? So then I was thinking of that, and then I said, but what's the difference between Ani and Anochi? Okay? Nishmati. Right? But wait a second. What is... The essential, Rav Yitz was talking this morning about kavanah in prayer. What is the essential kavanah in prayer? Here, we're talking about the rukhai, not the... What's the essential awareness you have to have in prayer? Or you should have in prayer? And it's very simple. And there's a book in English. There are a few books in English that I would recommend that you read on prayer. The first thing you have to do is you have to know the translation. But in the world of the idea of prayer, there are three books, and I'll give you them in the order that I found them meaningful. The first is Prayer by Eliezer Berkowitz. An incredible short book. Incredible. The second is, I forget the exact title, but we have it here, Prayer, that the Rabbi Soloveitchik. And the third is Prayer, again the title of the book, by A.J. Heschel. Okay, those are books that you can't go wrong. The essence of prayer is this word, lefonecha. You're in the presence of God. You're in the presence of God. That you're standing. Now, in the presence of God, where, now you might say, well, aren't we always in the presence of God? You might say that. Is that a reasonable thing to say? What does this say? What is this thing on the dial Yifnei Miata Omei? Right? Is that only in davening? What is this? Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. Always. God is before me. I am in the presence of God always. Right? But sometimes we forget. What's the first halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that the Ramah has? Right? See? The first halacha in Shulchan Aruch? Right? In the Ramah? On line 2 at the end of the line, Haga. Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamid. I place God before me always. That is the great rule. And he goes on, this is quoted from the Mor Nevuchim, 351. He goes on and he says that's the whole meaning of everything we're doing in Shulchan Aruch. Imagine you get invited to, I won't cause a scandal here, you get invited to Buckingham Palace. Right? I know that most of you would think of the White House, but I'm not going to get involved in that because I'll go off on a tangent. Right? So you know what they tell you when you go to Buckingham Palace to meet the Queen? You know what they tell you? Before you go into the Queen, you know what they tell you? They tell you exactly what you're supposed to do. Exactly. Every time. You know, Steven Rosenthal. He went in any number of times. He was director of Google Media Relations at Google UK. So he tell you what, we'd go to the palace pretty regularly. But every time they instructed him exactly how you greet the Queen. Chas v'shalom. Right? Why is it important? Because it's the Queen. So everything we do, the exactness of all of halacha, that's what the Ramah is saying. That's why he quotes. The Ramah is no great fan of the Mor Nevuchim, of the guy from the Plex. But this is the truth. All of Jewish law is about awareness of being in the presence of the King. Being in the presence of the King. Ooh. The Fanecha. But it's certainly true when you're talking to the King that you should be aware that you're talking to the King. You don't babble in front of the King. The Fanecha, being in the presence of the King. The problem with that, to show that there are further problems with our understanding, but I want you to understand what this is saying. Melech. Do any of you quake when you hear the word Melech? Do you feel this tremendous sense of awe and majesty and glory and pomp and circumstance? Melech! King! Okay, Americans. Do you feel this tremendous sense when you hear the word president?
Not anymore.
I'm editing myself. You edit yourself too. Okay? I'm not, right? Big deal! You know, Melech. What's Melech? I still have, when I was a kid growing up in Calgary, we spent months and months getting ready for Princess Elizabeth's coronation. Whoa! Prince Elizabeth, and she came with her husband, the Duke of Edinburgh, right? Prince Philip, right? I didn't even realize he actually has some talents. He knows how to play polo, right? And it was the winter, and they rode in a car, and I stood outside, a little kid, maybe 6-7 years old, freezing, Calgary. It was the winter. You can check this out, you know, like, you know, did she ever come to Calgary? You know, was it during the winter? It was freezing. Just to catch a glimpse of Princess Elizabeth. That was something. Melech. So our words are failing. They're too weak. Our problem. So you have to have some sense of glory, of majesty. The word Melech appearing over and over again. I am admitting that the fact that I am is only because you have given me the ability to be, and that's a cross language pun. Be, Beit Yud, and be, right? The end of Murder in the Cathedral, right? You know Murder in the Cathedral? Do anybody read that? Murder in the Cathedral by T.S. Eliot, about the murder of Thomas Becket. The end, the chorus sings after Becket is dead, oh, you know, that everything we do is only the power of God. The atheist's ability to deny God is only because God gives him the ability to deny him. Right? Melech chai v'kayam. Right? Okay. Chai v'kayam. Those are that God lives, that God exists. That's, it's like trying to express ultimate existence, the source of all life. I could talk for a long time about Chai V'Kayam, but I'm not going to do it. Shechazarta bi nishmati, my breath, my speech, my consciousness. And how did God return it to me? B'chemla. What does chemla mean? With, somebody said, what? How did you say it? Mercy? Loving kindness? Okay, it's a word for mercy. Now this morning, I was thinking about this. Chemla. Okay, why this word? What is the specific meaning of chemla? Right? Now I know that whoever composed Modeh Ani, whoever composed it, what he had in mind was the following pasuk in Mishlei. Chadoshim labekarim. Every morning, new, every morning. Okay? Rabba emunasecha. Your mercy. Rabba emunasecha. Your emunah is great. Your emunah is great? Your faith is great? What would that be? Your emunah is great? What are you saying about God's emunah? Where do we have in tefillah the word emunah? In tefillah, I'll be more specific. In Shmoneh Esrei, which is the classic word for tefillah. It's in the bracha of Mechal Kel Chaim, Mechai HaMeitim. What? Better. That's v'ne'eman, because v'ne'eman, we also have kikel mele profane ne'eman v'rat manotah. Okay, that's right, same word, but u'mekayem emunato to whom? God fulfills chai v'kayam, it's a play, the poetic play. Mekayem emunato, he fulfills emunato. To whom? The Shenei Afar. Who are you, Shenei Afar? The dead. To those who sleep in dust. That's the principle of Tchiyat HaMeitim, which I'm not going to go into now. But the Mashal of Tchiyat HaMeitim. The Kotzker Rebbe once said, they told him about somebody who was, mixing up stories. Kotzker Rebbe once said, I have the power to bring the dead to life, but I would rather spend my time to bringing the living to life, because your breathing doesn't mean that you're really, quote, alive. Rabba Emunatecha, I think I chopped off. Rabbah, great is the certainty, the truthfulness. Tchiyat HaMeitim is the ultimate model. But my waking up every day, my waking up is no certainty that we are going to wake. You know, I thought of this last year. You know, I went under an operation. I mean, I was in an operation, you know. And, you know, they put you out. I say, you know, that's when you think about whether you're going to wake up. I don't mean to be, you know. You know, the last time I was put out somewhere, they gave me a minor operation. And it just got me very high, so I was making a lot of jokes. And then I heard the doctor passing by, and he said, "Shut that guy up." And he stopped. So that was it, you know. So I thought it was funny, but okay. To come back to life, to get up in the morning and to say, "I'm alive, I'm alive." One of the really meaningful moments in my life was when I was teaching Yeshiva at Mitar. This happened about 25 years ago, and in Shir, so I asked a question and hands went up, and I called on somebody, and the guy answered, and then another kid who had his hand up lost his marbles. He started screaming at me, "You never call on me, Rabbi! You hate me! You know, he went ballistic!" Right? It was like silence in the... You know, the guys didn't know what to do. It was near the dungeon in the... Yeah, the guys didn't know what to do. I thought maybe I could cool the situation for a moment. I was supposed to say, I hate you, you're right. Okay. So, you know, I thought maybe that would be a humorous thing, but I realized, fortunately, I didn't say that. So I said, "You know what? Let's not talk about it now, right? You know, they've come to my house." He came and he came to the room downstairs that we call, that I call a dungeon in my house. And we're talking. And we're talking about really powerful stuff, right? I hate him, right? Suddenly, while I'm talking to him, I like this story because I'm back in that moment. While I'm talking to him, suddenly, I feel it. He was sitting there. I feel it. I said, What do you feel? I was in the army. I knew about, like, you know, like that. You know, I practiced on those blow-up dolls. And a lot of Haredim got into the army with me also. They wouldn't practice on the dolls because they were female dolls. So, you know, but I was, you know, modern Orthodox. So, you know. That's really true. Okay. So as opposed to other things I might say, but you know, the really true is really true. So I said, what are you, so he says, "My heart." I said, "Oh, no." You know, say, what? He said, I feel the blood moving through. I feel my heart." That was a wonderful moment for me in life. Right? This kid felt alive for the first time in his life. Okay, and then, you know, we talked a little more, and he talked about his parents, and I got it. Okay, that was it, you know. So anyway, after that, we had a good relationship. Rabo emunatecha. One word, one last word. The word chemla, mercy, loving kindness. Chamo amasecha. Right? You know the song. You could actually have kavana. Right? Vesismach amasecha. Even if you don't have kavana in davening, when you sing nigunim, you could have kavana. Not a bad idea. Otherwise, you might as well sing in Swahili. I'm assuming you don't know Swahili or Swahilian or whatever it is. Chemla. So I was thinking, what does this word mean specifically? Now, there is a teaching from the Alter Rebbe that the first time a word appears in the Torah, that's the basic definition of the word. Right? So I looked. Chemla. Okay? And in fact, I examined every time the word chemla appears in the Torah. I use the concordance, I will admit it. But the first time it appears in the Torah is in this week's parsha. Lot is tarrying to leave. To leave stone. What happens if he stays too long? It's curtains. Okay? Vayit mama! Right? Okay. Vayachziku hanashim biyadov yadishtov yadshtevin osav B'chemlat Hashem alav. So they took hold of him. B'chemlat Hashem alav. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, again, I'll use the word merciful, right? But what is this mercy about? This mercy is about life and death. When you're talking about the difference between life and death, it's an issue of chemla. The two other places in the Torah where the word chamol is used, and they're both life and death. When the little ark is opened up and Bat Paro sees this child and she holds his life and death in her hand, a tachmol. And then in Devarim, it says, don't have chemla on somebody who has seduced others into idolatry, in the case of the Mesit. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in returning our neshama, which is life itself, the giving of life, is always bechemla. There's nothing more that you can have than life. That's the greatest gift. So, okay, I'm going to control my Yetzirah Tov. I have some stories I was going to tell you, but forget it. Oh no, I use them some other place, right? But here it is again, Modeh Ani, right? Okay, those people who are asleep now, right now, wake up to consciousness, right? Wake up to language, wake up to thought, wake up to awareness and realization, wake up to ultimate truth. Right? Where is it coming from? Modeh ani lefonecha. Melech. Melech. From the Melech. Try to get some sense, some imagination. Melech. Chai v'kayam. Shehezarto bi nishmati. I'm alive. Right? Bechemla. And that's always ultimate mercy. Chamol al ma'asecha. Life and death hang in the balance on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Chamol. Chamol. V'atohu melech. Chai v'kayam. Chamol al ma'asecha. V'chemla. Rabba emunatecha. And the ultimate end of days. Tchiyat ha-meitim. Tchiyat ha-meitim. We all go through mini tchiyat ha-meitim. Right? We are in the light of eternity. Sub specie aeternitatis. All those who have passed on are only sleepers in the dust. The dead shall rise. Ultimate redemption will come. But is whether or not we will wake up in the same way that we wake up every day without Modeh Ani or with Modeh Ani.
Hi guys, we have a bubble.